1-800-981-15 to record your message. This show is edited by Ursula Rudenberg from Pacifica Radio Network. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. You also heard Let's Gather Kinfolk by the Ukrainian Village Voices. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
Good morning. This is Disability Justice, an everyday pursuit and survival. Your host, John Griffiths.
And Dina Wilder, board operator.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, and we are in the midst of our spring hive drive. It takes all of us to put out shows on KBOO, and that includes you. You are part of the hive. You can help our Disability Justice Program, which airs every first Friday morning from 9:30 to 10, by donating to KBOO. You can go to kboo.fm/give. And now to John's interview.
So in the studio today with me is Gabe Triplett. Did I get that last name correct?
You did.
Parent advocate. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So can you tell us about how parents wind up being the caregivers, getting paid to be the caregivers of their kids with disabilities?
Yeah, of course. So I know that parents throughout Oregon have been advocating to be allowed to be their child's, their underage child's paid caregiver since before the pandemic. But we know that when the pandemic came around, the reality that many Oregon families, my family included, were living in, became the reality of other families throughout Oregon. So parents couldn't keep their kids healthy and safe and also go outside the home to work. Schools became not an option for children. Things like that that were always a reality for disability families in Oregon became the reality for most people. And at that point, we really pushed hard on the state and at the federal level to allow us to have what's called an exemption. So typically under federal law, parents are not allowed to be the paid caregivers of their underage children. However, over 20 different states have a waiver, what they call it, where they ask the federal government to allow them to do just that, to pay parents. And so Oregon got a temporary waiver that has allowed us since January of 2020. And when I say us, I mean parents with kids with disabilities, to be our child's paid caregivers. And it has, well, I'll tell you, John, it's literally been a lifesaver.
Is that because, you know, one parent has to stay home and that kind of cuts your money in half, but this helps bring back the income to the point where you can afford the rent and
That's certainly the experience of many families. And I think two things I want to stress is that this temporary waiver is set to expire on July 15th. When that happens, hundreds of families who are, you know, considered the most vulnerable, families with kids with high medical complexities, will be thrown into crisis. And so when you ask, why is it a lifesaver for us? I can speak from my family's perspective. I recently had to step away from my job. If my wife wasn't being paid to care for our son, it would have been our only income. I had to step away from it because as the pandemic is ending, employers are expecting people to go back in and work in person. That works for a lot of people now. It wouldn't work for us. It's still a very serious, the pandemic is still very serious for us. And so I had to step away from my job, which was a hard thing for me to do, but I had to do it for my family. And the only reason I was able to do it and make that decision that was the best for my child's, you know, health and safety was because my wife was getting paid under this temporary waiver. Now, if you think about me and my wife, we have two adults in the home. We both speak English as a first language, and we both have backgrounds in organizing and system navigation. And it is hard enough for us just to keep our heads above the water. Now I try to imagine the single mom in Southern Oregon who is told by the state of Oregon that there are two populations of people who cannot care for her kid and be paid for it. Felons and her. And she's told, you also cannot work while your kid has a paid caregiver in the home. So you have to be there. So what does that single mother do then when she has to work? What does she do with her disabled child? There is no, there are no other options. It's driving families into poverty. It's driving kids into institutions. And it's forcing families to uproot and move to states that do allow this on a permanent basis, like California, stripping them away from their natural supports that they know, because they need to be able to be paid caregivers and be able to stay home with their children and take care of their children.
So wouldn't paying parents to take care of their disabled child help us out with the caregiver crisis we presently find ourselves in? And it's not just this state of Oregon. I mean, it's all over the country.
You're exactly right, John. You're spot on with it. Me and the group of parents that I've been organizing with and advocating for, we've been reaching out to service providers. And so for your audience, you know, the state of Oregon often will provide services through these agencies. The agencies do the hiring and the paychecks and all that stuff. We reached out to these agencies and we said, how many hours are you not fulfilling because of the labor shortage that you ought to be fulfilling and, you know, under people's individual support plans? And 50% of the hours is kind of the bottom. Some of the agencies are reporting to us that they cannot fulfill 90% of the hours that are on their caseload. We are in a huge crisis here. And these agencies, we also ask them, do you foresee it getting better with the changes that the state has tried, you know, to their credit, has tried to implement? So like pay increases for nurses and pay increases for caregivers, sign-on bonuses. The agency says no. They say no, it's not even gonna make a dent. Come July 15th, we will be in a worse place than we are now. It's only getting worse.
And is July 15th the date in which they're going to cut off the parents getting paid to take care of their disabled children?
Exactly, because as it stands now, that is the end date for the federal pandemic health emergency, or the PHE as they call it. And so once the pandemic health emergency ends at a federal level, right now it's set to end July 15th, then the 300 or so families, the last I checked, there was about 300 families in Oregon using this program and having a parent be paid to be a caregiver. These families will be out of employment. They will not be in a situation where it's safe or they're able to go get other employment. Many of their kids, the schools are in shambles, especially for special education. And so we can't send our kids to schools. If the state doesn't do something, these 300 families, 300 plus families, it's gonna be a crisis situation. And many kids, I'm afraid, are gonna end up being pushed into institutions that don't have the room as it is.
And you said something kind of, I thought was really interesting. You said something about special ed. Now, is that due to the fact that we are having an employment crisis and many special ed teachers have left the educational field to look for something different? Or do you think it's just got a lot to do with the fear of catching COVID-19 and people are just not doing things in person? And with a person with a disability, if it's not in person, you're going to fall behind.
Yeah, I think it's an all of the above type thing. I think I think special education throughout the state of Oregon was greatly lacking in what it should be before the pandemic. And for all those reasons you mentioned, John, plus more, it's only gotten worse. We're homeschooling my son. My 9-year-old has cerebral palsy and cortical vision impairment. And my wife homeschools him now. We had to pull him out We tried to have an online learning for him, which he could have done, but we couldn't get teachers to show up to IEP meetings. It was that bad. And I honestly, I felt every time we met, you know, to have an IEP meeting and half the team didn't show up and the other half of the staff just looked like they were completely depleted. It was like, I couldn't really even be angry because it was just a bad situation all around. So all that schooling talk, just to say that, like, you know, a lot of people say, well, the parent could work while the kid goes to school. Well, that's besides how the school district, the districts are able to run. There's also the issue of like having to leave work constantly because, you know, your kids ended up in the ICU again, or they had a meltdown in class. You know, the kids with behavioral health issues and the school said, hey, you got to come pick up your kid. This is a full-time job and it is a wonderful job. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'll tell you, taking care of my son is what feeds me. It is a wonderful thing. Me and him are buddies, you know, like it is a great thing, but it is a full-time job. And so when you're asking parents to hold down two full-time jobs and you think that's going to be better for the children, reality check. When you overexhaust parents and when you deplete their finances and when you destabilize their homes, that's bad for kids with disabilities.
Mm-hmm. Can we clarify something really quick? What is an ISP?
An ISP is an individual support plan. And what the state does is every year, any family who qualifies for developmental disability services goes through two meticulous long meetings where the state does an in-depth assessment of just what the support needs of these children are above and beyond what is a typical for a child their age. So the state says they will allot a certain amount of paid hours where they will pay a caregiver hours to do that sort of work. That's not typical. And so they allot these hours. These hours are allotted, they're budgeted, and they can be used by families if the family can find an outside person to come in and do it. And the parent has to be there at the same time. So the parent can't use that time that a caregiver is in the home taking care of the child to go out and work, to go to school, to do anything else. The parent needs to be present at all times while the caregiver is there. So it really leaves families in a bind. But good question on the ISP, because it's something that we've really tried to point out to the state, which is you've already said that, you know, you've already put in the time and the effort to identify the exact supports that these kids need. So you know that it is more than what is typical for, say, taking care of my six-year-old daughter. But you need to allow parents to be that caregiver, or at least to have the choice. I know many families who say we want our outside caregivers. That's important to us for a variety of reasons. 20 different states throughout the United States, 20 plus, allow parents the option and the choice, and Oregon needs to be one of them.
You were telling me that the parent has to be around while the caregiver is in the home?
You know, John, I don't have the answer to that, and I wish I did. We've been trying for, you know, years now to have a sit-down conversation with Lilia Tennedy, who's the Director of Developmental Disability Services throughout Oregon, the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, which make the rules when it comes to this sort of thing, and the Oregon Health Authority. We are hopeful that we are going to get that meeting soon and that is in the works. So our advocacy is making progress, but we haven't had that meeting yet. So I don't have the answer to your question because they haven't answered that question for us yet.
What do you think is the most important issue regarding this parents getting paid to be the caregivers of their children? Children with disabilities.
Yeah. For me, there's two important things that stand out. The first is that the state really needs to trust parents when it comes to their children. I think that is with children with disabilities and beyond, but especially in the world of disability services, far too often parents are treated with suspect and treated as if we are the enemy of our own children. And I think the state really needs to start focusing on propping up the stability of families and trusting that parents, when they have the supports that they need, can do a good job. Isn't that true with all of us? I mean, the supports each one of us needs to do any task are different. And when we're given the proper supports, then we can do a good job. So that's the first one. The second one is institutions. And this is a huge one because for me, it underlines everything. If parents are put into this between this rock and a hard place, like we've discussed so far, the end result is that kids with disabilities end up in foster cares or group homes, as they call them, or institutions, hospital settings. That is not ideal. Someone could make the argument that those settings are necessary and needed and sure. But I think that everyone can agree that they're not ideal. Kids belong with their families in their homes, and the state should be writing their policy in a way that supports that to happen. I've just talked to, throughout this process, one of the great things that I've felt blessed to be a part of is hearing people's stories. Too many stories of single moms, especially. I mean, there's dads are here, but really single moms get the brunt of it. Too many single moms are forced to choose between, am I gonna try to live on the streets with my child with these high medical complexities because I can't afford the rent? Or do I put my kid in an institution where I know they will not be loved? That is the decision that the state of Oregon is forcing parents into. And it's a decision that no parent should have to make.
Yeah, well, the state only asks us so they can ignore us.
Amen, John. John just comes through and just hits the nail right on the head.
So what do you say to the people who say, well, what safeguards can we put in place to prevent the parents from becoming dependent on being paid to take care of their child and interfering with their development and their independence?
Here's what I say to them. I say, I'm not sure the full answer, but let's work together to figure it out. That is a valid concern. That's a real concern, right? Like, and it can't just be discounted, but I think that it can be overcome. You know, I don't have all the answers to that. I do know that right now across the country, parents are being paid to care for their underage children, and it's working well. I know that even here in Oregon, parents are being paid to provide care for their adult children with disabilities, and that works well, real well. In my last job, I worked as a supported living coordinator, and a good portion of my, so that I worked with adults with disabilities to live independently and thrive in society. That was my job, is to help them as much as I could to do that. And half of my caseload were part of what's called the family program. And this is where, you know, parents who were getting paid or brothers and sisters or aunts and uncles fell into the family program. What I saw was it worked really, really well. But I also knew that for a good portion of my caseload, it was not an answer. That was not an option. And what I think we ought to be doing is providing as many options as we can, and then putting safeguards in place to make sure that unintended consequences don't come about. And some of those already exist. So for example, those two meetings that I mentioned earlier, the individualized support plan and child need assessment, both of those meetings contain safeguards for this. I also think that one of the safeguards needs to be continual discussion and evaluation of every single one of our programs for developmental disabilities. And that conversation cannot just be with the professionals and the bureaucrats. It needs to be with the people with lived experience and who are being impacted most. So it needs to be with adults with disabilities and families with disabilities need to be able to come together and draft the policies that are going to control their lives. Those are the people who need to be in charge.
I fully agree with you. It's just oftentimes to try and get the state to agree with us, they always want to stick some kind of administrator or legislation into it. And it's just not, it's not formed around anybody's needs. It's formed around what somebody else who doesn't have any lived experience is assuming that we do need.
Amen to that, John. And they make it so damn complex just so that they can feel important that nobody can navigate them.
Yeah, I'm having problems with navigating the system myself.
And so that's what I'm saying, John, is like people like myself, people like you and people like the moms from Bend and Southern Oregon and people like the people who are on my caseload, we ought to be the ones at the table deciding what sort of policies are made. And then the bureaucrats ought to implement it.
Mm-hmm. What do you think should be the solution, or what should be done about it? It's not just, I think, just the parents getting paid, but I mean, there's just a really big system problem here.
Mm-hmm.
The whole social net. I mean, sure enough, if you would just please, I don't know.
No, I hear the question, John. Can I try to tackle it?
Sure.
So on the small scale, here's what needs to happen. The state of Oregon needs to amend its 1915K Medicaid waiver to include the ability of parents to be the paid caregivers of their underage children with disabilities, just like Arizona just did, and just like states across the country have been doing for a long time. So that's what needs to happen right now. On a larger scale, I think the state of Oregon needs to simplify services, and they need to work to get money and resources as directly into the pockets of people with disabilities as possible. The complexity of the system is outrageous. And so we need a simplified system, and we need the Department of Disability Services to get their communication in their own house in order, so that when I am told by my service coordinator at the county, or John, you are told by your service coordinator at the county something, that those two things match up. Too oftentimes they can be exact opposites. And that leaves too much space for implicit bias to come in, for all sorts of screw-ups. And what we have found in our advocacy with parents is that the only reason that only 300 families are using this program is, one, the state limited it severely and they did not include all the families that needed it. It needs to be expanded to all families who have children with disability hours. And two, the service coordinators did not tell everybody. I meet parents on a weekly basis who came to me and say, hey, I just heard about this. It's been happening since January 2020 and their service coordinator never told them. Now, what kind of money is that worth? You know, that's worth enough money to pay the rent and keep families in their houses while families are being evicted. Families with disabilities are being evicted from their homes. They don't have their heat on. They can't pay their bills. And their service coordinators are not telling them that there's an option available. So that's one of the things that I think, to address your question, needs to be fixed up.
Could that be impeding with, I don't know how to describe this correctly, but there are certain people have certain traditions from where they come from. Like, you know, they don't outsource their caregiving to members outside of the family. And I'm just kind of like wondering if, you know, like they said, you know, they only offered it up to like 300 people. I'm wondering if any of those people who come from a cultural background where, you know, we take care of family, we take care of it within the family and stuff like that, if they were offered that opportunity to get paid, or if they were left out.
You know, I can't say that I have the statistics behind it, but what you're saying rings true to my experience of the families I'm working with. Families like mine, two-parent, white, English-speaking families, seem to have heard about it first. And that's a problem.
That is a problem. Wow.
I think this is residual leftover from the days when institutionalization was the norm. They said they wanted to move to home-based system of care, but they didn't trust the families and the people. They were still relying on their old systems of staff and authority. They can't break free of it. And if it doesn't make sense with a family like mine, it certainly doesn't make sense with a family of Pacific Islanders or a family from Central America. We need to do a lot better on our cultural understandings and making disability services fit the person and the family instead of trying to make the person and the family fit disability services.
So you believe there's still a lot of ableism within DHS services?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's ripe with ableism. I mean, if you just look at the complexity, right? The complexity of navigating this system, it's covered in ableism and it's disgusting.
And hard and difficult and yeah.
Yeah, and it's set up for people who have a skill set that is the skill set of the bureaucrats and the policymakers that drafted these policies. It's not set up to work for people with any skill set outside of that. And it ought to be.
I know it should be set up so that it works with the skill set of the disabled. And I can tell you from my own personal experience, it isn't in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine, I mean, you know, if it's not set up for a person with disabilities, they often have to go seek out help from outside sources to be able to navigate the system in the first place.
Yep. You're exactly right. We got to do better. We got to do better. And right now, the first thing towards doing that is the state amending its 1915K waiver in order to stabilize families in Oregon. From there, we'll get our strong foundation and we can start building and working on other issues, because we really do, this state is not set up well for people with disabilities, and we need to change that.
Do you have some kind of information, contact information?
Yeah, for sure. So here's what I would say. We have two Facebook groups. We have one that's forward facing. If you just want to keep up with the information and find out what's going on, you can look up Oregon Advocates for Equitable Disability Services. If you want to get involved, if you want to be on the ground floor and writing the letters and telling the stories and helping the work along, then I want you to get onto Facebook and search Allow Oregon's Disabled Kids to Keep Parent Caregivers. That's the group for people who want to be involved. We have over 400 members right now who are working on a daily basis to make this happen. You can also look for me on Facebook and reach out to me with a private message, Gabriel Triplett.
Gabriel Triplett, just look for you on Facebook?
Yep.
Well, thank you very much, Gabriel. And
well, thanks for having me, John. And I wanted to just say to you real quick how honored I am to be on your show. You may not know this, but I watch you from afar and you are a role model of mine. And so I appreciate getting to spend this time with you.
Oh, thank you. Flattery will get you everywhere.
You do really good work and it's appreciated further than you know.
Wow, I honestly didn't think it was getting anywhere.
Well, you know, that's what it feels like sometimes, right? You know, it's like planting seeds, John. I think it was at a Real Choice Initiatives meeting where I first met you. It might have been at a protest or something. But it's those one-on-one conversations and interactions that plant seeds and inspire people. Like I have no doubt in my mind that the seeds that you planted in me have grown to the work that I'm doing today. And so I think it's true that we don't get to see the fruits of the harvest that we planted. You know, we don't get to be there for the harvest. We just get to be there for the sowing of the seeds. We just got to trust that the harvest will come and it will be a better place for people like my son.
I just want to thank you for keep the pressure on.
Yeah, we'll do. We will.
Yeah.
You have been listening to Disability Justice, and we hope you are inspired to join the hive for our spring drive. Visit kboo.fm and consider clicking on the big red donate button at the top, because that can help support programs like ours.
KABU is proud to co-sponsor Portland Folk Music Society concerts. The series continues on Saturday, May 21st, with a trio of Latina singer-songwriters, Tish Hinojosa, Stephanie Urbina Jones, and Patricia Vaughn, the Texicana Mamas. The Mamas use music and emotion to express their bicultural life experiences and strong pride in their Mexican-American heritage. The Portland Folk Music Series in Southeast Portland continues through June. For information, go to kabu.fm and click on Community Events.